Good morning and welcome to Neocony View. I'm Peter Newman. In the past, about a year and a half ago, we had a chance to sit down and talk with the executive director of the North Coast Land Conservancy, Katie Volke, and we've asked her back because, well, there's been some news afoot and we're all interested in what land is all about here, where it comes from, and maybe more important, where it's going these days. So, Katie, welcome back.
Oh, thanks so much for having me back, Peter.
I want to talk about your news, but first, just for those who missed the interview way back when, the North Coast Land Conservancy, give us the thumbnail on that.
Oh, sure. So about 30 years ago, we were started. We're a local land trust, and what that means is that we work with communities and willing private landowners to conserve lands, create nature areas, and help the coast to be a wild and scenic and healthy place.
How long has it been around?
It was about 30 years ago. We just finished celebrating our 30th anniversary. So,
and what was the original thinking? I mean, as I said, the land is here, and it's presumably going to be here, so why do we even have to worry about messing with it and, dare I say, conserving it?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, our founders, when they first started, the way that I hear them tell the stories, which I'm lucky enough to get to hear those stories directly from them, is it was during the time of, you know, sort of more fighting about the environment. It was fighting laws and regulations. People call it the Spotted Owl Wars, you know, during the days where it was sort of timber against the environment or the environment against timber. And folks just didn't want to have to approach it that way. We were friends with the people that were cutting the trees, and trees need to be cut to build the houses. And it just seemed like there was a better way to try to have a balance where there can be a healthy environment, there can be a healthy economy, and that all those things can work together instead of having to fight about it. And so it was kind of in the beginning of when land trusts were being created in Oregon. And what a land trust is it's all about being a willing participant. So it's none of this fighting regulations or trying to make anybody do anything. It's inviting people to participate in creating these extraordinary areas where you can have a healthy stream system, and maybe next door you also can have a development or a forest harvest. It's where it doesn't have to be one thing or the other, but instead plan in a way that you can do both. And so that's why folks got together to create the Land Conservancy. They were kind of exhausted from the fight, but still wanted to do something to make sure that the Oregon coast and its ecosystem stayed really healthy and special.
You know, as you are describing that, there's a sort of inherent optimism in what you're saying about how we can solve problems. And yet, the state of Oregon has seen one of the biggest fights in modern history when it comes to how land should be used. Just last year, you know, the whole, and that was admittedly federal land, a somewhat different issue. But the contention between how land should be used still seems to be there. And boy, the temperature really has gone up on all of that in the last year or so.
Yeah, I think it's always out there. I mean, it is really hard to figure out how all of us people can live in this world in a way that we can use it without harming it. And luckily, the Land Conservancy doesn't have to figure that out for the whole state or for the whole world, but we're able to use our science and our local knowledge and the trust that we have within the community to just put the vision out there. What do we think's possible here in this spot? You know, we work just from the Columbia River down to Sluts Bay, and that's a really significant part of the world. It's also pretty small when it comes down to it. And so we can make a small difference in a big world. And I think that's the best that any of us can do. And in that way, I am always optimistic because we've had the chance to work with all kinds of diverse partners. You know, it's really heartening as someone who went in to do environmental work to be able to sit at the table with a developer and to be able to sit at the table with a timber owner and to come to a common goal around something that we both think is good and it has a good outcome for the public and for the environment. We have to have those moments so that we can remain optimistic about the future.
Our guest this morning on Neocony View is the executive director of the North Coast Land Conservancy, Katie Volke. Well, Katie, put us at the table with one of these meetings. Here you are. There's a timber company. They're in the business of growing trees and cutting them down, hopefully in some proportion that keeps the land and the trees around for the rest of us to enjoy. But what's the nature of the negotiation? They want to run their land, grow their trees, cut their trees. What do you bring to the table?
The way that we do our work is we really end up purchasing land, especially when we're working with a company where the reason they own land is for economic gain. So a lot of their goal is to manage the land within the law, and then reap the economic gain that that meets their bottom line. And so the way that we can come to the table is to help them meet their bottom line, which is that financial gain of the land. So like I say, we don't go in and say, hey, stop cutting down these trees. It's not our right to ask them to do that. As a land trust, what we do is try to say, you know, hey, this is this really amazing stream. The reason that it's a special stream is because of the salmon that are spawning in it and the plant species that grow next to it. And it delivers drinking water to a town, maybe. And because of all those reasons, right here, we want to see if this can remain a natural area instead of being a timber harvest area. And so sometimes that can work out. I mean, sometimes it's an area that they wanted to sell. Sometimes it's an area that they just agree. It's a spectacular place. There's all kinds of land and stream out there, and they all make a big difference. But some of them are just that much more special, that much more unique, that much more important to the healthy ecosystems. And that's where we really try to focus our work, is the specific places that are the ones that are going to keep the Oregon coast functioning and working as a healthy environment. So we come with that conversation. Sometimes they say, you know, I don't think it's going to work out, and we shake hands and leave. And sometimes there's a way that we can start a conversation. And we've had an amazing amount of success in recent years. A lot of people probably heard about the Boneyard Ridge acquisition that we completed just this last year, which was on Tillamook Head. And that was with the Lewis and Clark Timberlands. And for a number of years, we were working together, and they wanted to see that land come to the Land Conservancy as much as we wanted to see it come to the Land Conservancy. And so we had a very willing partner in that project.
So, which brings us to, is it your latest acquisition? Perhaps since the time we last talked, there have been others, but this is a pretty big one, 3,500 acres. Where?
Yeah, so this one is huge. It's beyond pretty big. it's more than we have ever done in total in one potential project. And so it's a huge undertaking for us. Like you said, we're looking at potentially purchasing 3,500 acres. And that would be from the peaks of Onion Peak behind Arch Cape and Cannon Beach there. Onion Peak is one of the highest peaks we have out here. And it would come all the way down the Arch Cape Creek watershed and meet up with Oswald West State Park.
That's a huge area. Who owns it now?
Well, right now it's actually owned by a company called Onion Peak Holdings. Prior to that, it was owned by Stimson Lumber. And for a number of years, we had been talking with Stimson about this type of an acquisition. The land that they owned there was as many as 5,000 acres and had a lot of low land behind Arch Cape and Cannon Beach, but also these incredibly steep slopes that we see, especially right now with snow on them. You can really see the rugged coastline that's there. And from a conservation perspective, the most valuable ecological lands up there, because they have rare plants that don't grow anywhere else, and they have fish that spawn in the streams. Those are the really steep slope areas, the watersheds, and the top of those peaks themselves. And so this is a huge area, and the Land Conservancy wasn't going to be able to buy and be a responsible steward of all 5,000 acres. So we wanted to do this 3,500-acre area that is Onion Peak Corridor all the way down, connecting with Oswald West and Cape Falcon Marine Reserve. Because of that connectivity, you have an entire coastal ecosystem from the top of the Coast Range all the way out into the ocean and everything in between. It would be one of the most spectacular conservation projects in Western Oregon. And we had been talking with Stimson about it, and they were like, you know, that does sound spectacular, but we don't want to break up our holding. We have this 5,000 acres, and we can sell the 5,000 or not, but we don't want to parcelize it. And that's something that the Land Conservancy comes up against. I mean, it makes sense. A lot of landowners don't want to just peel off a portion if they're going to be selling land. But this area is so extraordinary. Like I say, it has plants that grow nowhere else in the world. It has some of the most stunning view sheds that are all along the Oregon coast. It's a vision that our original state Parks Director Sam Boardman had starting from the 1930s. He thought that this area could be one of the nation's great nature parks. And he got darn close with creating Oswald West State Park, which, as we know, is one of the most popular state parks in Oregon. But he said, you know, there's always been an ulterior motive in creating that state park, which was to connect the peaks all the way to the ocean because it's such an extraordinary landscape. And so, you know, we really wanted to see if we could carry this water just that much further. And it seemed like we might have the opportunity. And so we started talking with some partners and different folks. And Onion Peak Holdings is a timber company that manages land for a sustainable timber harvest and also likes to work with conservation groups to facilitate community goals. And so we were talking with this company about whether or not they might be able to purchase that full 5,000 acres and then allow us to purchase a portion from them. So it's kind of this complicated way of making it happen, but it worked for everybody. Stimson was able to sell their entire 5,000 acres, which was how they wanted to be able to do it. And in doing that, they were able to sell it to a company that was willing to work with us. And Stimson knew that this company was willing to work with us and so had particular interest in making that happen. And what we have now done is signed an agreement with this company where Onion Peak Holdings will keep it for us for 5 years. And we have 5 years to raise approximately $10 million to purchase this 3,500 acres so that it can be one of the great natural parks in our nation.
And then what will happen to the other 1,500 acres?
That area, we're also going to keep working with the community and with Onion Peak Holdings around some drinking water protection and sustainable timber harvest plans. So there's a term that gets thrown around a little bit that's called a community forest. And I would say that that community is really interested in seeing if there can be a community managed forest right in this area. Like I say, it's this lowland. It's been harvested a number of times. It very much was managed as industrial timberland. And so it's going to take quite a lot of active work to rehabilitate the land into more of a rainforest ecology. And in so doing, there would be tree harvest and commercial harvest that goes on. But I would say in a pretty different way, closer to what you see on a national forest compared to the private industrial forest. And then we'll be really interested in continuing to work with the community to see, like, what is the best future for that land there. The Land Conservancy might not be the best owner of formerly industrial land because of the amount of forestry expertise that you need to be able to manage that kind of land. But we can be a really great partner in kind of helping to chart the path and help determine what that future could be for the sake of the people and the drinking water and the land.
Our guest this morning on Neocone View is the North Coast Land Conservancy Executive Director, Katie Volke, who's describing a process that I think is a lot more complicated than a lot of us think. You know,
yeah.
It's not just about taking the land and making a deal, but what managing the land after that and, as you say, rehabilitating it. It also occurs to me, as you describe a fairly complicated transaction and the history going back to when Oswald West Park was established, it sounds a little as if Land Conservancy, yours and presumably others, are sort of doing the work that the state used to do. You know, the state would set up a state park and work with landowners, and for various reasons, you know, there are not a whole lot of new state parks being created, that you're sort of in there doing what used to be the function of government.
I think that we see this probably with all kinds of government programs, national and state. They have boom periods and they have lull periods, and there'll be another boom period, I'm sure. But there's a lot of cuts to federal and state funding that helps states create these kinds of natural areas, to the point that, you know, some agencies can sort of barely just do the minimum maintenance. And so in order to be responsible landowners, they can't take on more. That's something that we really need to think about also, is, you know, make sure that we can keep our pledge of perpetuity and be really good landowners into the future. I think what we're finding is that, you know, in a time like right now where there are a lot of threats to these funding sources, those philanthropic people are feeling moved even more to give to great causes. And that might not be great that people feel like they have to fill the role of government if that's how they feel. But again, I'm always a little bit on the optimistic side of things, where we are, you know, we're in this country where freedom is a big part of what we would celebrate. And private land ownership is a big part of what our country has also already always celebrated. And if those people out there that have the means to make a difference for all Oregonians through protecting natural landscapes, if they're moved to do so, that I think in itself is just a beautiful thing. It's what keeps me hopeful about that, that there's still a great humanity out there always, you know, regardless of what's going on with the government or other things, whatever we might be down about for other reasons, there's that people are good. Most people are really good. And in this line of work, I get to see people from all walks of life that want to make a difference. And the Land Conservancy is a group that can help them do that.
I think you've started to answer my next question, which is, if you're going to purchase 3,500 acres, where's the money coming from?
Yeah, so it'll be a mix. We'll definitely be seeking out some large state and federal grants, and we will also be seeking out some everything from the $5 gift to the $1 million gift from philanthropic individuals. So it is going to take a huge effort to raise this money so that we can not only buy the land, but also put money in the reserve so that we can have what we will need to be good stewards of the land. Again, we're not going to be able to make money off the land. We're not going to be harvesting trees and having that kind of a kickback. And so to be good stewards of the land, we'll also need to raise money to put into a long-term stewardship fund for that. And so there are a number of individuals that have heard about this project through the grapevine for a number of years and have said, you know, if that ever comes to fruition, you come talk to me. And then there's a whole lot of other people that that we just, again, have to remain hopeful that when they hear about this possibility that we could create one of the great parks in the nation just right here on the North Coast, that they'll want to be a part of it. So over the next few years, there's going to be a number of like town halls and community meetings and listening sessions and that kind of thing. We just want to hear from as many people as possible about, you know, how do you hope that this all shakes out? How do you hope that we manage the land? What kind of goals would you have? Do you want recreation? Do you want hunting and fishing? Do you want big trees? Do you want there to be a little bit of harvest involved? You know, we just really want this to be something that all North Coasties can feel like is theirs.
Yeah, I was going to think, in 5 years from now, if I'm on some trail someplace, am I going to know where your land ends and the park begins?
That's a great question. I mean, I suppose that maybe we wouldn't want you to have that feeling that there's some boundary.
I mean, there'll be a sign or something like that, but I mean, functionally, will the trees look different, or will the trails be maintained?
Certainly.
Will there be trails?
Yeah, certainly the long-term goal would be that there would be this seamless corridor of rainforest and stream and hillside that goes from the top of Onion Peak all the way out into the ocean. And so there certainly will be a lot of look at trails, whether or not we should just use the current road network and use that as the way people access it, kind of maintaining that as a trail network, whether or not new trails should be created. Those are all the questions that will come with these community sessions and with our big task of creating management plans in the years to come.
Is this sort of thing happening all over the country where groups of people, organizations are getting together to look at these parcels and saying, well, what could we do to make sure that it looks plausible in 50 years?
Yeah, there's close to 2,000 land trusts that are all across the nation. Here in Oregon, there's about 20 or so active local land trusts. So the kind of work that we're trying to do right here is being done across the state and across the nation. And what I think is really cool about it is that it's that we are locals. We live here in this area that we're trying to protect. We talk to our neighbors about it. We talk to the business community about it. We want it to be something that the whole community is interested in, feels good about, wants to be a part of, wants to be able to share with their children and their grandchildren. And so certainly that's a big part of why, even in difficult times or in challenging fundraising times, it's why I always feel good about doing this kind of work, because it's like with the people, for the people, you know. It's the whole think globally but act locally, and you can really make a huge difference. You know, a small amount of people can make a huge difference when they put that kind of focus right in their community.
Of course, if you were purchasing this land, I assume there's probably some other really nice piece of property you're not purchasing someplace, or is it just an ongoing project in which you're looking at it all and just seeing what can be done individually? How do you pick and choose your land?
Yeah, it's a great question, Peter. It's one of the hardest things that we have to do. You know, again, we're a pretty small organization. We have these really big goals and a really big vision. So we spend a lot of time using science and local input to create focus areas. And so within our big service area, that's from about Astoria down to Lincoln City, we have about four or five areas that we've said, okay, this is where we're going to really focus our work until we've made a difference. And the way we determine having made a difference is that we've done enough work with those areas where we've created connectivity. And so that's where, you know, we don't have just one little parcel, but maybe a number of projects that have created a corridor. So more like a wildlife corridor phenomena is what we're looking at. And so we have to look at that big landscape and say, you know, where is it possible to do that? And we've been really successful in doing that in some areas all along the Clatsop Plains over about 20 years. We've created a wildlife corridor there, up in the Skipanon Warrenton area, again, over about 20 years, and multiple projects, you know, upwards of 20 different acquisitions. We've created great connectivity within those networks too. And so this is the next spot that we're looking at. It's a focus area we call the Coastal Edge, and it's looking from Tillamook Head and Ecola State Park down to Nehalem Spit. Because within there you have these three big state parks, you have the Cape Falcon Marine Reserve, you have local efforts like the Cannon Beach Watershed, the Ecola Creek Forest Reserve, and right on the top of Onion Peak there's already a conservation easement. So in an area like that, you can see that there's already these big yet disconnected natural areas. And so what we think we can do is come in and connect it. It's by doing this corridor from Onion Peak to Oswald West, our 3,500 acres, you know, multiplies on an order of magnitude because of that other acreage that's already there.
Yeah, the state park system in effect becomes yet another seed for individuals to do what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I use that word connectivity, and it's something that that I say enough, you know, just in my daily life. It makes a lot of sense to me, but I'm not sure that it's just, you know, something you walk around the street talking about. I think a really easy way to think of what does that mean, systems connectivity, is just thinking of like our own bodies. You know, we have a brain, we have a heart, we have the circulatory system, we have these arms and legs, and any one of those on their own isn't all that effective. They really only work as a person when they're all put together. Yet there's some where, you know, if you didn't have like, maybe you have an injured pinky, you know, you're still a pretty effective person. And maybe you could do without that pinky. So that's kind of how we can make some trade-offs, you know, but doing without your heart, doing without your brain, doing without the connections between your heart and the brain, you just can't. It doesn't matter if you have all your fingers and toes, all your arms and legs, like you're just not going to be able to make it happen. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about connectivity. Land Conservancy doesn't have to own it all and manage it all for it to work, but we do have to have the heart and the brain connected to the vital systems for that ecosystem to keep functioning through time.
So when you're driving around and you, you're obviously going to be a little bit more sensitive to the land and who owns this and what's the value of that than the rest of us. You drive around and say, gee, that's an interesting piece of land. I wonder who owns that and what the story behind that land is. I mean, is that an occupational hazard for you?
I suppose it probably is. But, you know, just like most people who drive around here, I'm mostly just captured by like how extraordinarily beautiful and phenomenal the Oregon coast is. It's really easy for me to be motivated to do this work because of that. I can't imagine there's very many people that have ever come out here that wouldn't have the feeling of, wow, this is a really special place. Like, this place should be here forever. And so I'm a biologist. I think I mostly when I'm driving around, I'm thinking like, ooh, I wonder if there's Chinook up in that creek right now, or gosh, I wonder if cutthroat can get all the way up over that waterfall or not. And so I'm kind of thinking of it from that little bit geeky standpoint of being the biologist. And that's what drives our work, is the biology. And so, you know, when we find a place that just has this really extraordinary ecology, something that's like irreplaceable, you know, you can't get it back if you let it go. Those are the places where like, okay, well, let's find out who owns that land and let's see if we can get to the same table together. So it really starts from the ground.
So if we want to go and take a look, at least virtually, at the land, can we go to your website? Do we learn more about it?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do we? Because I think a lot of people are going to say, gee, I didn't even know about this. How do I find out more?
Yeah, I hope people do start to check it out, and we'll get more and more up there, the more that we know. But so our website is nclctrust.org. And if you go on to that main page, you can get into some tabs that say like how we work or where we work. Find your way to the Coastal Edge Initiative. And then within that, you'll see maps and focused in maps on this 3,500 acres, which is a project that we're calling the Rainforest Reserve. So this acquisition is about protecting that rainforest ecology. And so we're starting to have more and more maps and information in there so that people can really dive in and see pictures and aerial photography and that kind of thing of what the area is.
Excellent. Well, Katie Volke, who is the Executive Director of the North Coast Land Conservancy, very excited about this. Can't wait to see what happens, or maybe if we're lucky, we won't see it, and it'll just sort of grow organically.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? Yeah, if you don't notice it, that's maybe when we've done our best work, because it means that the best thing happened, and it just gets to stay.
Thank you, Katie Volke, and thanks to all of you for joining us this month on Neocone View. I'm Peter Newman.